I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We're celebrating 20 years in business at Lighthouse and just entering our seventh year of doing open line programs. We have a few new exciting changes first. We have our new 2015 open line format that comes with the launching of our brand new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication events tab in case you'd like to go back. We have many years of diverse topics, nice spread. Plus, our brand new book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon or click on the book icon on our homepage so you can get a copy. Our topic today is creating a legacy family business. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, to bring effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, executive onboarding for success, leadership training, operational productivity improvement, and exploring global options for expanding your business. In fact, we just opened an office a number of months ago in Taiwan. So if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas of how to interact with a U.S.-based organization, just let us know. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to the number of calls we get from our clients both domestically and globally to address the various business issues that organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion. We'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible, so please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guest. So during our program, you may want to write down two or three questions to either send in during the program or ask once we open up the line. Our special guest with us today is Ken Udy, Director of the USC Marshall Family Business Program and Managing Director of the Gord Group. Ken has been a longtime friend, client, and truly, we've all heard people say, you know, you got to take your business to the next level, and you kind of wonder, what does that really mean? Ken actually has taken companies beyond the next level. I've witnessed it for years now. Before joining the board group, Ken served as president CEO of six different private equity-backed companies in a variety of industries ranging from logistics to building materials to racing and women's cosmetics. That's diverse, Ken.
It is. Exactly right. It is exactly right.
Bell Helmets was a cool one, too. What they had in common was the need to create stability in the organization, grow the top line, and improve inefficiencies to drive profitability. Ken earned an MBA and an MPR from the University of Southern California, where he is also in the process of launching the USC Marshall Family Business Program, which is focused on helping family-owned businesses create and preserve wealth by increasing the professionalism of the business and the effectiveness of the family. I feel privileged to have Ken with us, this is going to be an amazing program. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic will be the mobile workforce, the office of tomorrow today, how to manage and lead the mobile workforce. So welcome, Ken, and thanks for being on Open
Line. Thank you, Dana. Thank you for inviting me in your studio today. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
And we'll see. Here we go. We'll give our guests a little view of where we're going. We want to talk just for a second about the importance of family-owned businesses. As Dana mentioned, we're in the process of launching the USC Marshall Family Business Program. We're going to talk about HAP. We're going to talk about the four different phases of business. And then finally, we're going to get into some of the critical issues that a successful multi-generational family business needs to navigate. The importance of family businesses, it's just a huge driver in the U.S. economy. You can see here that about 90% of all businesses in the U.S. are family-owned. It represents 60% of the jobs, 65% of the gross domestic product, but the mortality rate is extremely high. Only 40% of the businesses transition from the first generation to the second, and by the time you get to Gen 4 and beyond, there's about a 95% mortality rate. So something's going on here, and that's why we have launched the USC Family Business Program, and that is our mission, as Dana said, is to help family-owned businesses create and preserve wealth by increasing the professionalism of the business and the effectiveness of the family. So there's three chunks here. One is create and preserve wealth, because the statistics are shocking on how much wealth does not transfer from the business into the family for the family use. Increasing the professionalism of the business. We're going to be drawing on the USC Marshall faculty and subject matter experts. And then finally, the effectiveness of the family, which is where all the soft topics come. We're also doing it in a safe nurturing environment. Dana, I believe a number of your guests are all Vistage members, and Vistage was very important to me as some formative years, and that is the structure that we're modeling this program. We're going to have several different chapters. We're seeking members to come and work with us and commit for a year. And if you go to uscfamilybusiness.com, you'll learn a little bit more about what our offering is going to be. I mentioned we're going to talk about HAPS, and Dr. Lee Hausner and Ernie Dowd, a number of years, wrote a great book called Hats Off to You. And the story came when Lee was working with a Canadian family, and it was a family-owned business, and one of his sons was running a division, and he never hit his numbers, always underperformed, but always expected a big raise. And one day he came into the office, and his assistant said that his dad, the CEO, wanted to see him at home, and he was pretty excited because that's normally when he goes and gets a new dividend check, gets a raise, a new title or something. And when he walked into his house, his dad picked up a hat, and embroidered on the front of the hat was CEO, and the father put the hat on and said, "Son, I do have a check for you today. Unfortunately, it's your severance check. You're fired. You've underperformed." He took off that hat, put on another hat, and embroidered on the front of that hat was dad. So he put on the dad hat, reached over to his son, and gave him a big hug and said, "Son, we heard you lost your job today. We want you to know that your mother and I are very, very supportive." So that's where Lee and Ernie got the idea about HAPS. And there are 13 different HAPS in a family business collection that you can see listed here. And each HAP has a role, a responsibility, and accountability. And if you don't have a HAP, you don't get a vote. So we'll be talking about HAPS a bit today. So, for example, the hat a founder wears, the rights of the founder are virtually unlimited. The responsibility to the founder is to lead succession planning process, and he's really accountable to himself and his family. If you're a manager, for example, you're wearing the manager's hat, your rights are fair treatment, equitable compensation. Your responsibility is performance of your assigned function, and getting work done with and through others, and your accountability would be to the CEO and to the top managers in the company.
So Ken, we actually had a question come in, if I could pose that right now. Because there's emotions involved with family-run businesses, when do things start to break down with the switching of the hats?
Well, it's a great question, and I think we'll get to it. But, you know, a core, Dana, and the listeners, is it comes to, you know, communications, having a good plan, making sure that plan is written and on paper so that everybody can understand what it is. Because if you aren't communicating, things can break down. Ways to put boundaries around you and to increase your batting average would be to have a board of advisors. So that would be a board of advisors for the company to make sure it's going the right direction with communications. And then also a family council so that the family can be talking. And we'll get into some of these things in a bit.
Perfect. And also, if people have questions along the way, please feel free to put them in the chat box or hold them till the end of the program.
What we have up on the screen now is, you know, the four basic phases of the growth of a successful multi-generational family business. And I want you to start thinking, because in a minute we're going to throw up another model about the roles and responsibilities and challenges for the founder, the family, and the business and ownership as a company goes through these stages? Because stage one would be the startup. The founder has the idea. You have to prove the business model. You got to reinvest in it. And the stories you hear about the founders, you know, struggling through these phases are inspirational and incredible. Phase two is you're starting to grow. You're getting some momentum. You're aligning the management team, and you're reinvesting in the business really to prove your business model and ramp it up. Phase three is the phase where you're creating wealth. The challenges there are to consistently make good decisions, generate and manage cash, build your management team, and become stable. And then the final phase is when you've made it, you know, when you've achieved wealth and you become a family office, you have the resources to invest back into the family, back into other family businesses. And in the USC program, we talk about phase one, two, three, and four. And then we also layer on that generation. So you can get pictures of people. If you say you're Gen 2, phase four, I think you all have a picture about what a second generation phase four individual might look like. Or if you were Gen 3, phase one, you see a picture of someone that's just been beating their head against the wall, should probably go find another business to get involved in. And now we'll go through to the model that Lee and Ernie put into their book that we think really addresses those key six areas that a family business needs to navigate to create a successful multi-generational enterprise. And the first is the founder, and we'll get into some of the issues facing the founder here in just a minute. The second separate bucket is the family. And then you got to look at the business itself, the management and governance of the business, the ownership structure around the business, and then the management of the wealth in the business. And I'm going back to two slides here. Look at remember this image, because as we talk about the roles and the responsibility of the founder, the family, the business, etc., it changes as you grow and you go through the different transitions.
Ken, we have a question that just came out regarding what's called the founder's trap. You're probably familiar with that. Any examples you could provide around that?
Said another way, the founder's trap is when the founder just gets over his head and doesn't realize it and doesn't look for either professionalism of the management or getting the right people around him to make those decisions. I'm working with one company now that is doing exactly the right things to avoid the founder's trap. The owner is on the creative side, and he doesn't like running the business. So he's in the process of bringing in a general manager so that in the board meeting, he can sit on top of the business as the owner, work the plan with the general manager, but then on the day-to-day basis, the general manager is going to be telling him what to do and what is expected of him as the head of the product development and the creative side. So to me, that's a good example of someone who understands where they're strong, understands where they need reinforcements, and puts the right team around them. Think back to those four different phases of the business, and on the slide now, how a founder's role needs to change and evolve over time. At the startup, the founder is really, he's the doer and the initiator. He's getting it all done himself. As you transition to phase two, the founder now needs to become a builder and a student. So that when you get to phase two, the founder becomes now the manager, the teacher, the CEO. And then growing into the phase four is the mentor and the door opener. And when you see that in a business, you can see, you know, really a healthy set of, you know, of alignment between the founder and what the challenges of the business are. Part of the realization of the founder is he needs to realize that he or she is not going to be sitting in that position forever. You know, there will be a change in the leadership of the company sometime. So the founder's role as they grow in age and the company grows is to prepare for the transition, prepare to retire. Make sure that you're doing the right thing in the transition of the management, the succession planning that we'll talk about in just a bit. And then also make sure that you understand your finances and the financial independence that you need. Because you as a founder, if you know that your financial future is secure, that will give you more incentive to let go a little bit and coach and mentor the next generation. And then in that planning process, too, you can help to determine what's appropriate for the rest of the family members.
So, Ken, another question just came in regarding alignment. So the question is, what can a family do to stay aligned with the founder and the goals of the business? Because of the emotional thinking come in there, regardless of what's written down, there can be this overriding factor. Can that take place?
Yeah. Yeah, it comes down to communication, but, you know, I take a step back, and in my personal life and professional life, Phil Matthews is one of my great life mentors, and he said if you stay true to your mission statement and if you have your guiding principles, the decisions get to be pretty easy. So the recommendation and the coaching then is for the family and the business, or the family business, to have a unified, aligned mission statement, and then know what your core and guiding principles are, and figure a way to communicate around that, get that in writing, before the heat of battle. I was talking to one family, had a great family business, had four kids. The kids were in the mid to late 20s when he appointed each child to be the chairman of the board of the family enterprise for a rotating two-year basis. So over 8 years, each one of those four children had a chance to be the chairman of the board. And they wrote down their family policy manual. So there was total transparency, total communication, and, you know, therefore total alignment. And they started with their mission statement and with their guiding principles. And it's turned out that, you know, the current business that is generating the wealth for the family, none of the kids wanted to be a part of. That's fine. So in this policy manual, they defined what the rules were for the cash and the wealth being generated in the business to help fund one of the other passions of the family, so that their core family business became the bank for the future ventures that the children were all passionate and the father were all passionate about. You know, in a way that was open, transparent, great communication system around them. And so they really got ahead of that game. When power or leadership of the company transfers, there are four basic styles, right? There's the monarch who's going to rule with the iron fist until he's kicked out. There'll be the general who will leave grudgingly and kind of hang around a little bit, but usually leaves under pressure. The governor is kind of a hired gun, right? The governor is there for a term, and when this term is over, he's gone. He or she is gone. And then the style that you want to try to create a role model for is the ambassador. That's the ideal one. That's the founder who has accepted their role as they transition in the business grows, and they take great pride in building the management team and mentoring the next generation. Think back to that one model that had the founder on top and the family's role on the bottom, and then it stepped through the business management ownership and wealth. We start to address now some of the roles that the family needs to think about while the family dynamics changes, kids get married, grandparents pass, and the goal for the family is to make their movement in search of balance purposeful and deliberate rather than random, and to understand, you know, a lot of the differences that, you know, with the value system, think about the difference between the value system of a family and the value system of a business. For example, the family in terms of membership, you're born into the family. On the business side, you're recruited and you earn your way. The family values relationships. The business values results. Family looks for unity. Business enjoys competition. Family looks for security. Business is willing to take risks. So all these things you got to, you know, understand. Family likes status quo, where a growing successful business challenges that and likes change. So one of the roles of the family is to really understand and talk about the different value systems in the family and in the business to make sure they're understood. I mentioned here family myths. These are kind of the unspoken laws that affect behavior, you know, in the family. For example, what dad says goes. That can be a myth. Avoid conflict at all costs. The eldest child comes first. These are all beliefs in the family that might not be healthy for the business that need to be understood. And then you'll see that fourth point around communication. It is so important for the family business, the family, to get educated on how to communicate, practice. Get the music going on here, Dana. Practice.
I'm sorry, Ken. I don't know where that's coming from. I apologize, everybody.
That's fine. I think somebody might have a phone on. We might be hearing some music.
Yeah, I don't know. We muted everybody out.
We want everybody to mute, right?
I didn't do it, Dana. I'll keep going and just try to talk over to our technical staff, figure this out. But I would encourage you all in the communication to really work on it, talk about it before it becomes a critical issue, so that you can model, you can talk about how we're going to resolve conflict and get an approach to solving problems. And then in those conversations, also talk about your aspects. Have a chat. People are worried. I've heard families say, okay, I'm worried my dad. Take that off. Put on my pants.
Okay, it's really hard to hear.
Yeah.
Where the individual is.
Okay, just one second. Hey, Ken, hold on for one second. Let me, I don't know why this has happened, but let me do one.
All right, there it's gone.
It's gone now.
Hold on. Everyone, please. There, it's gone. Nope. Let me try one thing. Okay, Ken?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's... I apologize for that. Let's keep going. And there's a question that came in, but why don't you keep going, Ken? I'll get to the question.
Okay. Then we get to, you know, again, think about that six-phase model. Now we're talking about the block of some of those key things within the business. So understand where you are in the business cycle, looking for the operating efficiencies and effectiveness. And one thing, red flag, be aware of, is watch out for what we call a split business personality. For example, in a family-owned business, financially, the company might be very mature. It might be a phase three, very mature. But organizationally, because of family dynamics and who's involved, it might be young. So try to grow your business so that it stays aligned, so that you're growing all facets of it. In this area, too, embrace the professionalism of the business, whether it's within family members or bringing in outside executives. Always work on education and the professionalism of the business, and to make sure that your business is physically and fiscally fit and working well. I've always found it's kind of funny that I found that when I felt a business I was running was falling apart, it was actually getting better, and it was getting better because I was pushing on it more. And when I felt a business was going pretty well and I would take my foot off the pedal, it would start to slow, the momentum would start to slow down. So always keep working on your business. Be strategic in your thinking. Take time to work on the business, not just in the business. Establish a vision for for the family and the business and how the family and business vision mesh together. I would suggest getting a planning team. Don't work on it just by yourself. Bring in an expert that can really help you look at the competitive landscape when you build your business plan, but then also help you look internally at, but where is the family and their interests and their acumen in terms of entering into the family business? And then, again, beating the drum, get it in writing so that you can manage and execute on your plan. I've always felt that if it can be measured, it can be improved.
Ken, we have a question come in here. To what degree do you adhere to and or realistically deal with a founder whose attitude is that much, even most of the financial wealth position is kept from the family during the process?
Well, first of all, that's not healthy. And it needs to be addressed. And if the family has not been successful in, you know, creating that transparency in that environment for the founder to share, then you look for outside help to enlighten that. You know, and that could be in the form of a family counselor that gets involved. It could be, you know, participating in one of the family business programs around like the USC one, so that you can get the founder in a room with other founders, other Gen 1s, or current Gens, I like to call them, to learn from each other and talk about what's involved in getting a good transition and what the pitfalls are of not having a good transition, and the risk to the founder's health, wealth, and long-being, as well as what the impact could be on the family.
Ken, another question. Thank you for that, Ken. Another question just came in. Any best practices for holding a second-generation shareholder who was born into the family business accountable for their functional role in the business? That's part one. And then two is creating a performance improvement plan for said individual. Two and three, and best practices for terminating an employee who is also a shareholder.
Last one's a stickier one, isn't it? A lot of those things, if you get ahead of it and create a policy manual or family constitution, I call it what are the rules of engagement for a family member to get involved in the family business, what are the rules? I've seen cases where some of the rules are they need to work outside of the business for at least 5 years, get two promotions and increase, you know, salaries, you know, to demonstrate that the promotions were real, to prove that they have the capability to come back into the business. To always have a job description and a performance review in place so that you can hold the family member, the employee accountable. Let's go back to those the hat collection, you know, the rights, responsibility, and accountability of an employee. And that's what a family member is when they're coming back in. They're an employee. And the responsibility is to complete assigned tasks and to establish standards. And they're responsible to their immediate supervisor. So that's where, you know, you gotta look at the data. And hopefully there's data so it's not emotion just staring at somebody. In some of these performance reviews, when I've had sticky situations, I've used Dana services as well to help coach somebody and get corrective action plans in place. You know, the cold part of me says, you know, you got to manage the business first. And if the family members fit into that scheme, great. If it doesn't, then there's probably opportunities for them to work elsewhere. But you can't put at risk the family business because that's what's creating the current wealth that is paying the bills and is creating the opportunity for you to have your legacy.
Thank you. We're going to take two more questions that just came in, then we're going to continue, and then we're going to open up the line at the end of the program. So next question that just came in is, how far out should the founder be planning their succession, and does it depend on age of the founder, phase of the business, or something else?
I'm thinking it's 3 to 5 years. I mean, you might not be verbal with it when you're thinking 5 years out, but you should be thinking about it. Because if my experience in getting involved in business is it takes 2 to 3 years to turn something around and get some momentum. So I'm going to say it's going to take 2 to 3 years for the person coming in behind the current managing generation to be competent and able to move it forward. And, you know, go back to the styles of the transition. Ambassadors plan ahead, right? And ambassadors, you know, build a network around them. They take pride in coaching people and seeing it successful.
Okay.
And that also goes back to, you know, when we were chit-chatting before we started the formal presentation. I believe that, you know, you need to continually make the best long-term decisions for your business. Best long-term decisions. But you got to be prepared to sell it tomorrow in case, you know, the phone rings, it's a great offer, or in case the founder goes to the doctor and is told you better not be doing what you're doing anymore. You got to be making those good long-term decisions, and a big part of that is management development.
Good point. Good points. All right, last question before we move on. What are the top 3 reasons why strategic plans tend to fail or significantly underperform?
Tend to fail if they don't believe in it, and if they have faulty assumptions, don't believe in it, don't focus on it, don't execute to it, it's going to fail. I've seen a lot of strategic plans be an interesting exercise that then gets put on the bookshelf and doesn't get implemented into the operating plan, and you got to get that strategic vision into the culture. And that responsibility sits in the corner office. You know, the person sitting in the corner office needs to buy into and believe in the strategic plan. I've also seen plans not succeed based on faulty assumptions. But if you do a plan internally and don't look externally for external input on what some of those core assumptions are, competitive landscape, market trends, you know, you might be blindsided by your current version of the founder's trap.
Ooh. Thank you, Ken. Those are great. Okay, let's continue. And again, we're going to open up a line at the end of the program so you guys can talk directly with Ken. But if you have questions along the way, please submit them.
You know, again, we're down to about what the fourth major area of issues and transitions that a successful multi-generational family business needs to navigate through. Management and governance is a key one. Who's going to manage the business in the next generation? Because, you know, trust me, change will happen. You know, the person running the business is going to be a day older tomorrow than he or she is today. They are driving cars, there are train wrecks, it's going to happen. So the question is it going to be planned or is it going to be accidental? So plan for the change. Also be aware of how that management model changes as the business grows through it. That phase one business with the all-powerful founder, that single decision maker. Now, when the next generation comes in, more than likely it's not going to be the single decision maker. It's going to be more of a shared decision making, a collaborative decision making. So depending how the founder has developed the management team and the culture and the structure, there's going to be different things going on. And odds are when you get to, you know, Gen 3 or beyond, if you're fortunate enough to be there, you're going to have professional management in the business. Now, family could be professional management, or it could be outside professional management. We were talking before, and I'm looking at the points here with options and opportunities, and it's really, you know, identifying what are the key attributes that you're going to want an ideal candidate to have. And how large of a universe should you look at to go looking for that candidate? You know, so this is figure out with the key positions in the company what you want that successful person to look like, put it on paper, and then say, okay, or how far are we going to recruit? Are we going to recruit just within the family, best fit? Are we going to look at, you know, our market area and do, you know, professional search? Are we going to look nationally, internationally to truly bring in a rock star? Management development, and I beat on that, it's a key thing. There's some misconceptions out there. One of the big misconceptions is the way the mom or dad or the founder's way of management must be replicated. Nope, don't think so. We talked about how the founder is typically a single decision maker. You go to Gen 2, you're going more shared decisions. So just because the company's been successfully run by mom or dad, don't think that that is the perfect management system. Another misconception is good managers are born. They're not. They're developed. And in this whole management and governance process, an outside advisory board, a family council can really help. I've seen cases where the outside advisory board in a family business takes the lead in recruiting and choosing a successor, takes the heat off the founder and the family, but the board actually goes through the vetting process and compares the internal candidates to external candidates. And then the final area to get in today is really the areas around ownership, and things to think about there are, you know, when you have your business today and your family today, and if the kids are not yet married, it's probably a little simpler. When they get married and the family expands and we have spouses and kids and grandkids, think about what that right ownership structure should be. Don't take anything off the table. I would explore all alternatives, whether it's keeping it in the family or restructuring, sell it to senior management, ESOPs, bring in private equity money, whatever it might be. Look at all of your options before you pick things, and think hard about the difference between control and ownership. And my personal bias on all these things is put the best interest of the company first. Yes, balanced with the family, but put the best interest of the company first, because that is the vehicle, the enterprise that is generating the cash and the financial wealth for the business today. It needs to be protected.
Ken, a question came in. Is there a written article or a book that you could refer everybody to that outlines roles and responsibilities and specifically the differences between the following group: shareholders, board of directors, CEO?
This Lee's book, Hats Off to You Too, is a pretty easy read and pretty straightforward. It's not available. I happen to have the world's inventory in our office. So if any of your listeners would like, why don't you just send me an email, and I'll be glad to send you a copy of the book.
Could you mention the name? Ken's email is on screen.
It's ken.udy@marshall.usc.edu. Or you could go to our website, uscfamilybusiness.com, and, leave me a comment because, there were only a few thousand of the Hats Off to You Too books in the warehouse, so we bought them all so that we could use them for our program and to share with some of your good listeners, so I'll be glad to do that.
Okay, and another question came in. What are some recommended practices for finding external board of advisor members?
That's a TF for commercial. I'm part of the group called the Board Group, and that's what we do. So you could go to the boardgroup.com, and there are some resources there. If you want to put together an advisory board on your own, you can. The advice would be truly go outside of your sphere of immediate friends. You don't want your country club buddies. You don't want your accountant. You don't want your lawyer. You want to get somebody that truly have some experience in a space where you might be weaker. There are some assessment tools out there that we use at the Board Group to help identify where a company is strong and where it is weak. And if there's an area where it's weak, let's just say distribution or international distribution, well, then clearly we go try to find a board member that has had experience in building international distribution. Or if it's supply chain is your weak thing, we go try to find a board member that has a proven track record in supply chain management to help move that ball forward. And I think you'll find, too, with board members, they do it because they like to pay it forward and help people out. They do not do it for the financial return. So you can get some great, great people out there that want to become one of your allies and team members.
That's a good, and we've had a couple of questions on it, but how do you find the board folks? So I would suggest give Ken a call, the number that's on the screen, and then Ken can talk with you. Also, Ken, is it okay for people to email with at ken.udy@gmail.com?
Sure, yep. Easy to remember. ken.udy@gmail.com is my personal email, and yeah, go for it. That'd be great.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. All righty.
And then the topics for another day, because they're pretty deep and outside of my immediate expertise, is now that you've generated all this wealth, what are you going to do with it? You know, and that's to make sure that you successfully move wealth from the business to the family and that it's managed properly so that you can create your legacy. I've heard some pretty sad stories about some family businesses that, you know, don't like debt and actually put a little extra cash into the business, and then, oops, a lawsuit happens, and they lose a lot, where, you know, if they would have some a little bit more debt in the business, there would be an extra couple $1 million heading, you know, to the family for the family's benefit after after the train wreck. So think about all those things. And Dane, if I could put in a plug, on October the 8th, USC Marshall Family Business Program, in association with the Southern California Division of the Association for National Association of Corporate Directors, are going to be doing a three-quarter day seminar on just these topics. And Lee Hausner is going to be a keynote speaker, as is Jim Ellis, the dean of the business school. George Isaac will be there, as will Bill Hoffield. So it'll be a fairly interesting day. And there's information on that at the uscfamilybusiness.com, or again, send me an email and I'll be glad to send you out an invitation to that. And we're having people coming down from Salt Lake City, up from San Diego, over from Phoenix, and down from the Bay Area to come participate in the program. So it should be thoroughly interesting.
So we have a lot of people from all over the country today attending our program. So this is a national program going to be held at USC in Los Angeles, California. Was that October the 8th?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so if you want information on that, you can go to USC Marshall Family Business Program or email Ken. He'll help hook you up so you can you can attend the program. Should be an amazing day. Ken, any closing thoughts?
Communicate, plan, get aligned, repeat, right? Communicate, get a plan, get it on paper. Just with the USC program, it's been so rewarding to just have these conversations with family members. And, you know, they go back and around the dinner table, they're talking about topics they've never talked about before. And it's usually leading towards the transition of the management from one generation to the next, and what that should look like. And is the next generation, you know, ready or not? And, you know, come on, mom and dad, let go. I am ready. Go play more golf. Get out of our way. You know, just those conversations have been really rewarding to hear.
Well, this is a terrific program. We're going to open up the line in just a minute or so you can talk directly with Ken if you'd like. I'm going to ask everybody to put your personal phone on mute, and if you have a question, unmute your phone, because we do have quite a number of people attending this program. Our next program, you can see on the monitor, is going to be on October the 22nd. It's going to be the Mobile Workforce, the Office of Tomorrow Today, How to Manage and Lead. It's going to be a terrific program. I want to thank Ken for the valuable information you shared today. Being a part of this program was just amazing. I want to thank all of you for attending. Let me turn off a couple features here, and then we're going to turn the recording feature off, because a lot of people don't like being recorded once we open the line up. So we'll hold the line for 1 second. I'll be right back.